Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
The best there is, best there was, and the best there ever will be! And you know it!
With a tear in my eye!
The queen of the crop, acknowledge me!
Episode 394 of Top Rope Nation. I am your host for this evening, Jesse Velasquez. Ryan Drosty is not with us. We will talk about that here momentarily, but my friend to the right of me, Thomas Frank for Life, aka Justin Join, is with us. How are you?
I am doing pretty darn good, Jesse. You know, it's a little chaotic right now because school is starting, so we're just trying to get everything ready for that. And we are on, I guess I didn't tell you this pre-show, we are in a little bit of a timeline. My wife set our washer to start with a delay of 1 hour, and that washer is like 20 feet away from me. So hopefully we can wrap things up before then.
Done and done. So when is Kit's first official day of school, or was that today?
Tomorrow.
It is tomorrow.
Yep, we met up with his teacher this evening and met her and got everything organized, so he's ready to go. It's going to be interesting because unlike last year, the majority of his friends are in his class this year, so hopefully he learns something, anything.
I'm sure he will, but it also will depend on the attention span of his fellow friends too.
And just FYI, Thomas Frank is the current manager of Tottenham, and they are off to a rip-roaring start right now, which is why that is my tagline for the night.
Okay. Are they, I'm assuming they're unbeaten?
Yep. They've won their first two matches.
Oh, baby. Okay.
Yeah. Now if they could just maybe, you know, do a transfer or something, get some players in, that would be nice. Although I absolutely love what I'm seeing from Mohamed Kudus so far. So yeah, exciting times.
Roll with what you have for now and see how it goes.
Amen. I see your Vikings brought in Carson Wentz.
Yes. And that, the main, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is that worrisome? Like maybe they're concerned about JJ or?
No concern with JJ McCarthy. The concern was with Sam Howell, who they let exit. They traded him to Philadelphia. They wanted a veteran presence behind JJ McCarthy. However, the third string quarterback is an undrafted free agent from the University of Minnesota, Max Brosmer. And this is the reason why Carson Wentz was brought in. They did not want, Brosmer was going to be the backup. That's how good of a preseason he has had.
Okay.
So they want that veteran presence to hopefully mentor Brosmer in case something happens. And maybe in a year or two, he could be the backup to JJ.
Well, I'm relieved to hear that because I'm rooting for JJ. One of my buddies has invested highly into card collecting JJ cards, so I'm hoping for a big year from him.
Oh, 2 weeks from tonight, the co-hosts of Top Rope Nation Bowl, week number one.
Oh boy.
Chicago Bears, Minnesota Vikings in Chicago.
Hot damn.
Going to be a fun opening Monday evening. Do you know off the top of your head, real fast before we roll, who the 49ers play opening weekend?
No idea. See, I have no idea. It takes me a while to get it into the NFL season. It helps if the 49ers are good. It will probably make a huge difference because my kid is obsessed with football. But, you know, it's the start of the Premier League season. You know, we're months away from NBA season starting, and those are kind of my two preferred sports. So, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. It kind of just depends on if anything interesting is happening in the NFL.
Yeah, right now they have one healthy wide receiver besides Kittle too. So Ricky Pearsall is your number one going into the season. Ayuk will be back in about 6 or 7 weeks. I think Juwan Jennings should be ready to go, and the Seahawks is who they open with.
Well, hopefully Pearsall doesn't get shot this offseason.
This is true. Happened right around this time last year.
I believe so, yes.
Yes. So I'm going to roll the patron scroll, patreon.com/Top Rope Nation, which also is where you can find Ryan Drosty's Forbidden Door review from yesterday. Went on the air with Jeremy Loss on Breacher Report. Tremendous stuff, as Justin reported to me this morning.
Yep, I sent Ryan an angry message this morning that I wish I hadn't have listened to it, because all of his talking, or all of what were going to be my talking points for Forbidden Door, he basically knocked out of the park in the first 10 minutes of their show. So you're going to be hearing a lot of me regurgitating what Ryan has already said on the Bleacher Report.
That's how in sync we are as hosts, I believe. So patreon.com/Top Rope Nation. You can hear Ryan's thoughts on that. For the YouTube, also the $2.99 YouTube membership, you can check out the video there with Jeremy. His star ratings were also released to our patrons this morning. I released a TR and Unplugged on Friday, previewing what we are going to talk about here today, Forbidden Door from yesterday. And also halfway through the month of August in ECW 1995, I'm looking forward to the turn in September when we see a couple of Hall of Famers enter the ECW promotion.
So after I listened to Ryan's Bleacher Report review show of Forbidden Door, I went backwards because I had a busy weekend. I went backwards and listened to your preview show of Forbidden Door. So that was a fun little back-to-back, getting to hang out with my friends at work.
And see how my predictions were not horribly wrong.
I don't think they're horrible at all. I think you really nailed some of the major things.
Yeah, I most certainly did. I was just wrong on a couple of them. I would say I was shocked on, well, neither, I suppose. They both were probably the toss-ups of the evening, which we'll get into right now. But before we do that, how about, Justin, your grade for Forbidden Door yesterday?
Well, whether it's fair or not, it's tough not to grade AEW pay-per-views against all the previous AEW pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. And man, I gotta say, this one was pretty just meh for me. It's a lower tier pay-per-view. It's still like from top to bottom, every match floated around 3 to 3.5 stars for me. But unfortunately, every match floated around 3 to 3.5 stars for me. There, unlike most AEW pay-per-views, to me there was not a match of the year contender on this show. The major talking point on your preview show that I agreed with going in and bore out to be true is that this was just a really predictable show. And like you said, that's not always a bad thing. It just kind of felt like a little bit of a stepping stone to get to the next thing that'll be bigger and more important. So that kind of hurt it for me. I think we'll maybe talk about a little bit of the issues with just the whole Forbidden Door pay-per-view in general. That is a little bit of a mess right now. Although, you know, if you have banger matches, to me, I don't really care about the fact that it's supposed to be integrated with other promotions. So I would say I still had a good time. I mean, B minus, I would say. You know, it's I will take this over any WWE show of the year, but this is definitely, I think, maybe neck and neck with Dynasty for, you know, the quote unquote worst show of the year. It still had highlights. It had an absolutely amazing crowd and atmosphere. It was so cool seeing the O2 Center just jam-packed for this. There's a lot to like. I don't want to be too down on it, because like I said, it's not like I had a bad time watching it. And our buddy John Hope was there watching in person. He had a great time by the sounds of it. But it just was a little lackluster for me.
The energy in that building, yeah, totally fed into the performers as well. And you're right. I think this is one of those rare pay-per-views where the floor and the ceiling for it were almost identical.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I can't think of a match that was awful or something that like fell below from a grades perspective. And usually I can pinpoint one or two where I'm like, ooh, why was this on this show? And everything on it served its purpose. So I'm with you. I toggled in between the B to B minus range. I think as we talk about it, I'll give the definitive grade as we go on. But you're right. Those peaks, they didn't quite hit that note. I was a little higher on one match, I'd say, than other people were, where I would maybe go high threes, maybe the four range, but everything else was like 3 to 3.5.
And, you know, there was definitely matches that I was really getting into, and then there would just be something to pull me out of it, like some outside interference, or like, I don't know how I feel about Billy Starks yet, but like, that whole bit of the Athena and Toni Storm match, that kind of pulled me out a little bit. I got to say, one of my biggest pet peeves in professional wrestling is watching a wrestler who gets like knocked down or whatever on the mat. And then you just kind of see them adjust their body to get into position for whatever the next thing is. And there was a moment in that where Toni Storm had to do that. I don't blame them, but it is something that will take me out of a match. And then, man, it felt like I have a lot of issues with Hangman and MJF, that match. Okay. But there was moments and stretches in that match where I was really getting into it. And then they would do something to completely pull me out. There was just way too much gaga. I absolutely hated the spot with Hangman's foot on the rope where Bryce Remsburg made the three count, a groggy three count. And, you know, and then just minutes later, he sees Hangman's foot still on the rope with MJF trying to take it. It's just like, what are we doing here? These guys are too good for this. You know, I've talked many times how some of Will Ospreay's overindulgence in matches can kind of hurt his matches for me. And that same thing can apply to MJF. Both performers who I absolutely love, who are probably in my Mount Rushmore of current professional wrestlers. But again, there's a little bit too much of your typical MJF gaga in that match. So that one kind of hurt that.
Bryce Remsburg had zero energy after he hit that three count. I've never seen that before where the ref just lays there. There's no bell that rings. Nothing happens. So yeah. It was one of the rare unique spots in pro wrestling where I thought it was interesting. But you're right, all the gaga that led up to it was just... what wasn't there?
So how do we want to approach this? Start from the top and go down? Or like, do you have any big overarching thoughts on the show?
Ooh, where should we? Well, I think since from a viewership perspective, we're in the low end. Let's start at the top.
Okay. I feel like the right team won. Which is par for the show. I think, you know, basically I wouldn't argue with anybody or any winner. It just was like, it was fun. It was a little too, it got a little corny for a match that is, to me, felt like it, you know, it was a grudge match that should have been leaned into the violence a little bit more, or to the grudge of it all, considering everything that Moxley has done. But there was just too many like tee-hee moments with the gummy bears, like with maybe that spot on a Dynamite wouldn't bother me and I'd be able to enjoy more. The spot with them trying to stop Tanahashi from going up the ladder, just like that kind of stuff, it just pulls me out of the match. To me, it felt like the only person, like, you know, they talk about how in movies that actors, like, you might have one actor who is in a completely different movie than everybody else just by the way they're approaching the material. And that's kind of what this match was for me, with like the only person 100% in the right match was Darby Allin. And there was just moments where everybody else was, I mean, the Death Riders for the most part were in the right match, but I don't know. There was just, like I said, a little bit of a disjointedness to it that would take me out of the match at moments when I was really getting into it.
Even open up with the Young Bucks coming out to Hanson's Mbop.
That's fine. You know, that's before the match starts. I enjoyed that. That's fun. But, you know, even then it's like, then you just kind of see Omega and Ospreay dance along with it. And there's nothing wrong with fun and comedy and professional wrestling. But when it's your unsanctioned lights out steel cage match where you're going up against the Death Riders who've been, you know, reaping the landscape for almost a year now. And you're just doing the hee-haw stuff is just, again, just kind of took me out of it.
Especially when the 2.5 minute long video of Will Ospreay going through his career and his fiance just going through it and saying how proud he was of him. And he got all teary eyed even before the match even started. So to go into the comedy hijinks didn't really serve the role correctly. Well,
and again, you know, I liked the ending angle, but why did the baby faces all of a sudden forget how to climb a cage? You know, it's just even then that just again, it takes me out of the moment where it's like, I like what they're doing with Mox and Ospreay, but you know, the stuff outside of it's just like, it just kind of left me wanting.
It took the heels all of maybe 10 seconds to crawl over the top of the cage. I think it was Marina Shafir and Wheeler that were both on the outside. I know, like, as they were doing the closing credits, which for those who didn't know, the faces emerged victorious. And by the way, Hiroshi Tanahashi, that poor guy, I feel bad for his knees. He's just on his very last legs at this point. And the high fly flow, which he ended up securing the victory, it took him a while to even get up there.
Yeah.
Hard to watch.
Yeah. So it had its moments. Again, I'd probably put it around that 3. And I hate coming off so down on the show, because it's not like I'm sitting here hate watching it, or, you know, there was a lot to enjoy, you know, but when it just comes down to it, it's hard not to look at the previous pay-per-view or, you know, Revolution or Double or Nothing. It's just like, it all kind of left me wanting a little bit, but that's not to say I am very curious to see where things go from here with a lot of these guys, because, you know, obviously Ospreay could be out a year with his neck surgery. Swerve could be out a while from the sounds of it. So I don't know, but AEW could be looking very different heading into the fall.
Before we get into that, I need your thoughts on two specific spots. Let's go with the most gruesome one of all. John Moxley gouging Darby Allin's ear with the fork.
Love it. Especially with those two, you know, like they're in the middle of a blood feud, and especially considering some of the violence we saw between Hangman and Mox. Bring it. You know, that's the thing. How can we go to a fork in the ear to gummy worms? You know, it's just like there was two different matches going on simultaneously in this thing.
The other one was Moxley escaping to the outside, Darby following him, then him coming back in. Gabe Kidd gets up to the top of the cage. They do a coffin drop from the top through those double tables. I like that spot. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, it was wicked looking. Like, I loved all the stuff that felt like the Unsanctioned Lights Out match, you know? Like, they've set this precedent for what this match should be, and only half of this match felt like that.
Yeah. Darby definitely knew his role, like you said. Yeah. Him and the Death Riders were in the correct movie. It was the other six men, I'd say, more so than anything. So some other highlights, actually. I enjoyed Jim Ross's commentary just saying that John Moxley was channeling Abdullah the Butcher. And then Darby, of all things, just looks directly at him after he does that, and he spits on him. So what is... Claudio, by the way, threw Darby into the cage, which was one of the better spots of the night as well. I mean, just took him in. It would have been something from like ECW 97 when Bam Bam Bigelow threw Spike Dudley into the audience. Like, that's about how high Claudio threw Darby into that cage.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And then Claudio slamming Darby with him being on the chair after Moxley had been taped to it.
Yes, yes.
And then sorry for this in advance, Ryan Drosty. Shafir looking directly at Kenny Omega and saying, fuck you, Kenny.
Hey, that's my job. I'm supposed to curse on this pod.
I chuckled at that too. But the big story here, as I mentioned, Tanahashi did get the win. The match went about a half hour. I think it was 31 or so.
Yeah, that was right around 32 minutes or something.
Yeah. The big thing afterwards was the faces all exit the ring. Will Ospreay salutes the crowd just because he's probably acknowledging he's going to be gone for a little while, having neck surgery. Claudio comes out of nowhere as the credits are rolling with the European uppercut. John Moxley hits Will Ospreay about 4 or 5 paradigm shifts, and they do the signature chair spot, which they did to him at All In, by the way, in the middle of that main event, and just completely sidelining him, or just putting him out to pasture in character terms for who knows how long this is going to be. Something that Bryan Danielson has gone through. I believe Kurt Angle has gone through the same neck surgery. So we'll see how it goes. I mentioned this on Unplugged, by the way. What, from a face perspective, who steps up and tries to slide into these roles that Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland are going to be vacating?
I don't know. I mean, they almost went from having too many main event baby faces to possibly not enough if Ospreay and Swerve are both going to be gone for a while, especially when you consider, you know, the Death Riders, the Young Bucks, the ever-growing Don Callis family. I mean, there is just a dearth of heels, it feels like, right now. I would be looking at Darby having a bigger role, Mark Briscoe having a bigger role. We're going to get to it, but, you know, considering what's going on, I'm kind of shocked at the way they brought Wardlow back. I don't know. You know, it's like this roster is so deep, though. Like, I have no concerns that somebody will be able to step up and not necessarily replace Ospreay or Swerve, but at least fill the gap for a while.
You cannot replace those two men.
No.
They're half of your four pillars, who Swerve mentioned in an interview that they are half of the four pillars, along with the two men who wrestled for the AEW World Heavyweight Championships. I think another guy that could have been slotted into that role, we'll talk about him later, is now a champion, which is really cool to see. Brody King.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think the positive thing, I'll actually roll into the Hangman MJF match now, is that the championship is on a babyface, and the heel side right now is a lot stronger than the face side. So you're looking at some secondary guys, like, well, a Darby's going to have to be, for now, the de facto number two babyface. And it likely will be, because he's chasing John Moxley down. Mm-hmm. We don't know about, and here's another thing too, Kenny Omega, what type of conditioning is he in? How is he going to be a full-time guy right now? Is he going to be a part-time person?
He looked far from 100% in the match. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, even 70% of Kenny Omega is better than the majority of every other wrestler's 100%. But I think that's part of the story, too, is the only reason that he came back, just like Will Ospreay, is because this was a quote-unquote unsanctioned match. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. Somebody's going to have to step up, that's for sure. And I love you bringing up Hangman. It's like, it's just he just needs to carry even more of the load. And to me, to get into the next match, the most interesting thing coming out of the show is what's next for Hangman, considering he basically conquered the MJF thing for now, because obviously MJF still has his cash-in contract. But any guesses as to who Hangman's going to be facing at All Out?
All Out, no. I did make a prediction for Full Gear, who I think it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't hate that prediction. We have a lot to talk about with that guest, too.
We most certainly do. So I'll allude to that a little bit later. It's really looking, it's not bare. I did mention Ricochet at one point in time, but for him to not be on the show was a little bit telling. He was on the Zero Hour. But well, he also... Go ahead.
I was just going to, obviously, he might be having something else on his plate right now, considering what happened in the tag match. And that also, that doesn't feel like a main event world title match for All Out. I think if it was up to me, I think you got to move Hangman from feuding with the Death Riders to Don Callis' family, because there are a couple guys in that group who I think could make for a good main event match at one of their biggest shows.
There's one, let me tell you, that would be the obvious choice right now. However, in October, he's going to be going for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Do you want to pat yourself on the back right now, Justin, for pretty much calling this exact thing to happen right around this time last year?
I mean, I don't feel like I was alone. We're all huge Takeshita fans. It's nice that seeing this play out in this way, and I hope he gets it done, man, because it benefits AEW for Takeshita to be a big deal in New Japan. You know, we're talking, I mean, actually, we need to talk about the issues with Forbidden Door, but that could make it all the much better by having a big star in Takeshita as the world champion of New Japan.
Because a Hangman Takeshita main event at All Out would be fantastic.
I think you got to go Hangman Okada for All Out.
Woo!
Yeah. Not a unification match or anything like that. I think it's just got to be for Hangman's world championship because I, you know, as scared as I can get for the baby faces, Hangman has got to be the world champion for a while. You know, there's no reason for them to be taking the world title off of him anytime soon. And they can't screw up and have him feuding with guys who don't really feel like they're on the level of a main event. You know, wishing a speedy recovery to Adam Cole, but that really hurt Hangman the first time around in his first reign. So I think you got to go big here. You got to keep giving him heavy hitters to knock out of the park. It was great really seeing him take it to MJF there at the end. Crowd loved that final buckshot lariat. So I think you got to go with a big one like Okada.
So the ending sequence, I'm going to pull this up real quick. If mm-hmm. I recall, was he hit him with the contract, hit him with the dead eye, and then the buckshot lariat? I got two out of the three. I know that.
That sounds about right. I don't know. There was so much gaga going on in that match that.
Because we mentioned,
to remember all of it.
Yeah, we mentioned the Heat Seeker with the three count when the ref was down and just laid there, and Mark Briscoe coming out of all people, which obviously I think that's they're going to go to MJF Mark Briscoe at All mm-hmm. Out, which would be it's going to be an entertaining contest.
Hell yeah!
They got up, so low blow directly to the nuts once again as MJF was hugging Bryce Remsburg, which by the way, like Hangman or MJF was trying to kick Hangman's foot off, and the ref just so happens to get up and see it. That's where we're just kind of going, ooh, this wasn't good because the match as a whole was great.
Yeah. My only, excuse me. My only other nitpick is I wish they would have leaned in earlier on MJF trying to get the count out and DQ finishes. It just seems like they had their normal main event style AEW match for 20 minutes. And then they were like, all right, let's work in this stipulation into the match, right? I wish they would have just done that sooner. The match definitely felt too long, but I mean, it's tough in the year 2025 with the level that Hangman and MJF are at to call it a bad match. It's just they tried to do too much and they probably went a little too long, but there's still a lot to like. Just didn't really hit it out of the park for me.
Especially in that ending sequence, like you just mentioned. So, yep, it was contract to the head, followed by Deadeye, Buckshot Lariat, three count. Hangman retains here. And what was, like I said, other than those probably 5 minutes or so when they were trying to play around with the stipulation of title can change hands on a count out or a disqualification, ended up being a solid contest between the two.
Some fantastic sweating from MJF, too. I got to give my shouts out.
They both bled quite a bit too. Well, MJF did, specifically with that corner spot when mm-hmm. the top turnbuckle was removed as well.
Hangman's just not a good bleeder. Never has been. He's always had an issue with that.
I noticed that when he held up the title at All In, it just everything was completely dried up at that point. You know, I'm going to tie into this one here in a couple of sequences because I did hint at that earlier. So I will tie into that a little bit later. We're going to go in reverse order. Toni Storm retaining her women's championship over Athena. And my favorite spots of the match by far were Athena whipping Toni Storm into the LED board, it going out, and then Toni Storm whipping her about 5 minutes later into the LED board, and it comes right back on.
Yeah, I like that. That was good.
It was a fun match, though. And I was surprised by the winner, but now I'm thinking to myself, Tony's going to go on a mega run for a little while here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it only went about 16 minutes. I was, like you, a little shocked as to how decisive the victory was, but Tony worked from underneath the entire time. She was basically getting her ass kicked, and Athena looked great. And I think when you just, when you think about Mercedes Moné and Toni Storm, and honestly, dude, Toni Storm, she's not my favorite women's wrestler right now. I think she's just my favorite wrestler right now. I mean, that's how good she is. She's locked in with this character. Her in-ring work is exceptional. I really dug this match. Again, just the outside interference stuff kind of pulled me out of it. But I thought this was really, really terrific. Right person won. I think that's all I got on this one.
So I did get the main event wrong, and I got this one wrong, and everything else was very predictable, I think, even to the average professional wrestling fan here. And I don't really have much either, although I think I'll go out on a limb and I'll say, I won't steal this, but I did hear this yesterday from Ryan and Jeremy, is that they think that Athena might be the one to take the title away from Mercedes.
Yes, I agree with that too. And I think that's the way it should be. I don't know if Athena is quite there as world champion quite yet.
And Mercedes ends up at some point being the one to take the title from Toni Storm, which I completely agree with at this point. I don't think there's going to be another contender within that time built up strong enough to even think of taking that title away from Toni, who, yes, is one of the two best characters in professional wrestling now by a wide margin.
Absolutely. She's just, yeah, she's the best. Love Toni Storm.
Yes, we do. Kazuchika Okada, Swerve Strickland. And by the way, you mentioned 16 minutes for the Toni Storm-Athena match. Everything from the top to that match was anywhere between 11 and 16 minutes.
It was going at a good pace. And then they had to do the epic main events that went over 30 minutes and just kind of took the show way past the amount of time it probably should be.
Yeah. Two went over, like I said, I think it was 31 and 32 for those as well. Okada and Swerve. I felt for who was in the ring, I thought this would be a little bit better. I don't know about you.
Well, I'm kind of torn because obviously it came out that Swerve's been dealing with a meniscus tear?
Yes.
Since like 2019 or some shit.
Kind of weird to hear, but yes.
So obviously it doesn't affect him enough to hurt his match quality considering the number of great matches he's had. So I don't know. I agree with you. There was something missing. Now it could just be this is the start of something and you don't want to put all your eggs in the basket, you know, to kick things off. I feel that's kind of the same way with Athena and Toni Storm. They had a great match, but they left a lot of room for improvement in the next one. And I feel like that's kind of where this match was. It didn't really kick into the next gear until the very end. And then it got excellent. And kind of just like Athena and Toni Storm, not surprised by the winner, but surprised by how decisive it was. Obviously, Okada worked that knee over the entire match. So they have the out for Swerve taking the L. But, Yeah. Again, still enjoyed it. I'd still put it around that 3.5 to 3.75 star level. There were definitely moments in this match where you could see that these guys do have another level of magic that they could touch into together. They just didn't get to it on that night.
One thing that was odd to me was Don Callis on commentary when I thought everybody's supposed to be banned from ringside.
Well, on commentary, I'm kind of okay with that little loophole in wrestling. I'm not going to nitpick that too much. And shout out Swerve wearing the Mr. Terrific gear from the new Superman movie, which I watched for a second time this weekend. Absolutely love that movie. It's so good.
I still have yet to see that.
Oh, dude, got to.
Especially, is it, has it moved now to Max?
Not yet. It was the last weekend before school starts for my kids, so I just bought it on Amazon because really wanted to watch it.
If it's available in the theater, I might go see it on Labor Day.
Yeah, I'd say theater, or I mean, it's got to be coming to Max relatively soon. Then you'll be able to watch it for quote unquote free.
Yeah, great 3 or 4 transition sequence between these guys at the very end with, I believe, Swerve missing a house call and transitioning directly into one Rainmaker of all things to end this thing.
Yep. I don't hate that. I think it's important for big matches with main eventers to end with one finishing maneuver. We don't need 1,000 kickouts every match.
I completely agree. I will say this, though. Billy Stark selling the Storm Zero for about 5 minutes on the outside. I was like, yeah, why can't there be more of that when it comes to the finishers? Like, all right. Moving up the ladder. This one was interesting, to say the least. The triple threat, or the three-way for the AEW Tag Team Championships. The Hurt Syndicate taking on FTR and Brodito, which ended up being another solid match. I was a little bit confused with the inclusion of Ricochet in the Gates of Agony. To take out the Hurt Syndicate, and this, in a way, threw me for a loop. Go ahead.
They've been teasing it a little bit on television with MJF going to Ricochet and stuff. And obviously there is history between Ricochet and the Hurt Syndicate, because when they first showed up, Ricochet, I think, kind of insinuated that he wanted to join and they turned him down. So there is history there. But this was heading towards match of the night for me. And as soon as they showed up, the match just completely fell apart.
The ending.
Yeah. I mean, so in your preview, this was one of the things that you were spot on, is that you were talking, because you said FTR, right?
I did.
Mm-hmm. And you thought they were going to beat Brodito. But also, I guess at that time, you were under the impression it was going to be an elimination match. And
that's how it,
triple threat.
Yes, that's how I saw it online. Multiple people had said it was supposed to be an elimination match and not this fatal three-way that they've just been doing since the inception.
So obviously the rumors have been the Hurt Syndicate don't want to lose, or don't want to lose to certain people, or whatever all that is about. And I know like Bix and Span and some other people were just absolutely losing their shit, calling for the Hurt Syndicate to be fired because they wouldn't eat the pin in this match. And I don't know, man, if I had to like put money on it, my guess would be this was a Tony Khan call, not a Hurt Syndicate call. I think he's probably protecting his investment in Bobby Lashley right now. I think it can be saved by, just do the tag team match it all out. Brodito versus Hurt Syndicate. Let them get a clean victory over him or something. Like, I think it's salvageable. I'm just not all that bent out of shape about the Hurt Syndicate not being involved in the finish. I do think at some point Brodito need to beat them, but I'm okay with it not happening here. Like I said, love this match. Absolutely fucking fell apart at the end. Loved Brodito getting the win. Huge fan of both those guys. Excited to see where it goes. This was the one time I was a little shocked that Brodito won. Just because you would assume with Cope kind of feuding with FTR, and you assume the final destination for that is a tag title match against FTR, which is what you alluded to in the show also. You would think that would be the end game with the tag titles, they going from Hurt Syndicate to FTR to Cope and Christian. But I don't know. As much as the ending bummed me out, I'm still excited to see where we're going here. And mm-hmm. talking about maybe where MJF goes from here, does he feud? He can keep feuding with Mark Briscoe. There's obviously still some stuff going on here with the Hurt Syndicate, who, talking about Brodito needing to get a win over them, they're sure being displayed as baby faces, which they get baby face reactions. So I don't necessarily know quite how that dynamic works, but I still love the Hurt Syndicate. I love their presentation. It's fucking cool as hell. They look like badasses coming out with their hats. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited to see where it's going. I'm excited Brody King is a tag team champion. I'm excited Bandido is a tag team champion. LFG.
I'm thankful I was wrong. That's the team I wanted to ultimately win, and they did. I just didn't think they would pull the trigger. And unfortunately, the way they won it was just sloppy. Yeah. Ref stops his count. The rotation on Bandido's flip, which had worked the other three times that Brody had connected, didn't fall through. So the ref counted essentially twice for Bandido to pick up the pin and get the win. And then the chair shot from Cash Wheeler to Brody King.
Yeah, that was wicked.
Woo! He got smoked. Finish it off.
Do you agree with me that that's probably more of a Tony Khan call than it is a Hurt Syndicate, power struggle?
I think based on the way the locker room has been over the last year, yeah, I think this is a Tony Khan call. I really do. I feel like backstage morale for AEW ever since Phil Brooks left the promotion has just been improving leaps and bounds. And you really haven't heard anything about any dissension and people refusing to job. A bunch of that doesn't work for me brothers with like FTR as well. I know that there's the occasional scuttlebutt that they refused to job to certain people, but they were more than willing to put over Brody King and Bandido this evening or last night.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I guess the only curious thing is why MVP wasn't there. Curious if that is going to play into them losing. Maybe they blame him for not being there, or that they're going to play it off as to why that's why they lost. I don't know. Just very interesting. Hey, we got to rewind just a little bit.
Go for it.
Wardlow showing up at the end of Swerve Okada.
How did I omit that? Go for it.
I'm just a little disappointed in it. Like, I, for one, like we talked about, AEW kind of needs some baby faces right now. Wardlow was a great baby face when he broke away from MJF. We know he can do that. And frankly, his AEW career he's been a little bit of a faction poison. You know, he was in the Pinnacle, that fell apart. He was in the Undisputed Kingdom or whatever that shit was, that fell apart. And obviously he got injured and so they just throw him into another faction. I don't know. It immediately loses some of the luster of him coming back, throwing them with the Don Callis family, which I'm very much enjoying the Don Callis family. I think it's the best it's ever has been. But I would have preferred something different for him. Especially since he didn't even touch Swerve, he just powerbombed the security guys and stuff. So,
yep.
I don't know. I agree with, listening to the Bleacher Report, Ryan's co-host Jeremy said like, this is kind of his last chance. Obviously it's Tony Khan, the booking and everything, but for him to be something, they got to do something this time. So I'm again, curious to see where things are going.
His last match was a world title loss to Samoa Joe on March the 13th of 2024, the same night that Mercedes made her debut with the company.
Yep.
Yeah, I would have much preferred to see Wardlow in a babyface role. And like, where is he going to fit in with Don Callis? There's already a ton of muscle there. He stared down Takeshita. So does that mean Takeshita maybe starts to kind of pull the trigger on a babyface turn? Like, this is like the opening segment of it. It's one of those things that you're just going to have to wait and see.
I'm not sure I buy Wardlow as a heel. There's just something about him. I don't know if his face or his aura, he just screams babyface monster to me. So good luck to him. I hope they pull it off, and I hope he finds his footing, but gosh, I'm just not all that optimistic about it.
Yeah, it's hard. He could totally get lost in that faction, because we got a guy we're going to talk about here towards the very end. And I did mention Hangman Challengers. I threw this out on Unplugged. I said Bobby Lashley would be a good opponent for MJF, maybe a Full Gear.
Yeah, don't hate that. Don't hate that. Go from Hangman Okada to Hangman Lashley. That's some good stuff right there.
And that's how you build a babyface champion. So that's the one thing I do believe that is going to be a positive from Swerve and Ospreay leaving the promotion for a little bit, is Hangman has a clear path to be the guy.
Yep. He's the one that you put your biggest villains against.
100%. Zack Sabre Jr., Nigel McGuinness, Excalibur saying the greatest rock and roll band of all time is Oasis.
Wrong.
Mm-mm.
No, sir. No, can't agree with that. I like them.
I do too. Ugh, no, come on, Excalibur. Let's be real here. Nigel with the entrance and playing chess with Johnny Saint in the beginning. I enjoyed
good
that.
Good shit. Yes, loved both of their entrances. This felt big to me. I just wish it maybe been put on later in the show. You know, having the IWGP champion in the middle of it, I think, kind of hurt it a little bit. And I liked it because this match felt so different from everything else. It's so great seeing Nigel out there. It's just like one of those things where you never know if this could be the last time we see Nigel McGuinness wrestle. It kind of has that feeling to it. So it's just very special to see these two going at it in their home country. I dug this match. I don't think it was anything special. No. But yeah, just good old-fashioned graps.
I didn't know Nigel was 49 years old.
Oh,
I thought
no
he
shit.
Was like 43 or 44.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't have guessed that old either.
Yeah, I looked up his cage match today. I was like, no way. He looks younger than that to me.
Yeah, he's in great shape, taking care of himself. Looks good.
Yeah, tremendous stuff. Good technical wrestling pieces. I was kind of surprised Daniel Garcia didn't pull the turn here, and I was okay with that.
Yeah, save that for TV. I'm kind of down on Danny Garcia right now. Yeah, just hold off on that. I think a lot of people were swerved a little bit by him coming out with the towel, maybe expecting a Owen Hart moment from Survivor Series here, but that didn't happen. And that's fine by me. You gotta give the New Japan World Champion a clean victory on this quote unquote, shared show.
One of a handful of New Japan performers. There was one CMLL performer, which we're going to get to in a second, and then one Stardom performer, which same thing. We'll get to that in a moment. But outside of that, there was probably a half dozen people from New Japan, which we talked about it earlier. Forbidden Door is likely going to be coming to an end here, I think, very, very soon.
They've got to come up with a new hook for it, because obviously I think there's two big issues. One is that New Japan is not near as hot as they were the first time they did it. You know, all the guys who were big then are either gone or retiring, like Naito and Tanahashi, or they're in AEW with Ospreay and Okada and Jay White. New Japan is trying to build themselves back up, so it's going to feel lesser when that's the case. But also, it's just like, unlike the first time, we see these guys come in and pop up with surprise appearances all the time. Ishii is on AEW television all the time, so they need to do something different. My idea was do it in Mexico next time. Make CMLL a bigger part of it. Make, like a triumvirate of promotions. Because, yeah, I don't know. It's not something I'm going to get bent out of shape over, but something's got to change with it.
Yeah, this show essentially has just been a wrestling showcase for a long time. This was like one of the first times in a while, actually this might have been the first time, where there was true circumstances to most of the matches.
Mm-hmm.
Last year at Swerve and Ospreay at one point in time, they had rumored it to be Swerve and Yota Tsuji, but they just felt that you'd be better off for an Ospreay, I think, wanted to come in and put Swerve over.
And that's like, in, you know, no Shooter on the show, no Yuta, or no,
yeah,
it just seemed like there were some big names missing here. So, you know, and maybe it'll all change in a year. Maybe Takeshita solidifies himself as a big New Japan name. Maybe Gabe Kidd levels up. You know, there's ways that this could feel different, but I would lean into the Mexico aspect of it for Forbidden Door.
100%. And the G1 will not be the week before this event next year either.
That'll help big time. Yeah, I would just lean into the location of it all for Forbidden Door.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Mexico City in that arena, just especially after that that Dynamite we saw. Ugh. One of my favorites of the year.
Absolutely.
This was a fatal four-way with four representatives from promotions. And Mercedes Moné defending the TBS title against Alex Windsor. Bozilla, I'll get into her in a minute. I didn't know the lineage until it was mentioned. And then I have a horrible time pronouncing this woman's name. I think it's Persymphony.
I'm right there with you. I'm glad you attempted it, not me.
Yeah, I was calling her by the wrong name my entire Unplugged show. I go, oh man, I have not done that in a long time. This was a foregone conclusion, though, that Mercedes Moné was going to win this. Brittany, great to see you in the chat. Thank you for popping up in here. Bozilla is the daughter, and this is where I get to use my ECW knowledge, of Ulf Herman. He was in ECW for about 6 months in late 1998.
Oh.
He was like 6'6", 6'7", 280 pounds. He was just brought in as enhancement talent. I remember him watching him wrestle RVD a couple of times. And yeah, his daughter, Bozilla, put on a pretty decent performance. She's only 21 years old.
Hell yeah. Yeah, she was the highlight of this match for me. Perfectly acceptable match. I don't think it was anything special. But considering Fatal Four Ways, I thought it was laid out really well. Bozilla was the highlight. That can tend to happen when you really have no knowledge of a wrestler. That was the first time I've ever seen her. Got a lot of Vader vibes, which I absolutely loved. She was a monster. This was just fun. You know, this was just a fun little match.
It was. Again, no surprise, Mercedes. We knew she was going over here next. This one might have been my favorite match of the night. Maybe Kyle Fletcher, Hiromu Takahashi. You're in agreement with me, maybe.
I think so, man. Kyle Fletcher, dude, he's the fucking man. Nobody wrestles like him. I think, you know, Ryan and Jeremy brought up that he has a little bit of a reputation for getting people hurt, but goddamn, do I love the way that dude wrestles. Everything feels so crisp and legit. And you know, to get that kind of match out, you know, Takahashi's prime is past. He's not what he once was, but that dude can still go in the ring. He's good enough to know where he's supposed to be at all times. You know, it just, yeah, man, I dug this one way more than I thought I would. Going into it, and they are playing this Kyle Fletcher progression perfectly. Just let him keep putting on banger matches on pay-per-views against legit talent. And, you know, I think a year and a half, you might have yourself a legit main eventer. Cause he's not perfect yet.
Nope.
Like he still has some character stuff to figure out. He can't just be the guy with that dresses kind of weird with the funny sunglasses. There's got to be more to him than that. And I think there is, but goddamn, you'll be hard pressed for anybody I regularly enjoy more in ring than Kyle Fletcher. And I'd also probably put Mark Briscoe in there.
Fletcher had his suplex reversed on the apron into an apron DDT from Hiromu. Then he came off the ropes and did a sunset flip powerbomb. That looked like it hurt.
Hell
and Bryan Danielson, which we didn't mention, was on commentary for most of this. was putting over Kyle Fletcher immensely, calling him the fastest rising star in AEW and a future world heavyweight champion. I just thought all night long, Danielson was just making small points of simple moves, and all of that makes it, it goes a long ways in educating fans, mm-hmm. and getting you more invested in the match.
Well, even like it was the small stuff. Like they were talking about how, like, watch the way that Kyle Fletcher does his body slams and the snap he puts into it. It's like, I love those little details. I thought the commentary, like there were people kind of jumping in and out all night, but I thought commentary was really good on this show for what I caught. Obviously, you know, I fucking probably missed 90% of it.
It was like two. There was a instance where Fletcher hit Hiromu with a twisting tombstone and he got like a 2.5. And Danielson says, well, he left a little bit of space on Hiromu's left shoulder and didn't get the full impact of the move. Just again, simple little things just to kind of point out that, yeah, this is why the match didn't end. Fletcher ends up winning it with a sheer drop brainbuster directly in the center of the ring for the 3 count. Yes, I think going back, that might be the match of the night. Wow.
I agree. And it was probably the most predictable match of the night.
Easily. That and ZSJ over Nigel McGuinness. Those two, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Good call. Good call.
And the one we're going to talk about to close, the return of Adam Copeland and Christian Cage as a tag team, defeating Kip Sabian and Killswitch or Luchasaurus, which the crowd was chanting for Luchasaurus. I'm happy that they were at this point. It was just a lot of singing and a lot of gaga. I'm going to ask you this. From an Adam Copeland perspective, he's starting to remind me, and I'm going to steal this a little bit from somebody online, of Jey Uso. All entrance in mm-hmm. minimal wrestling. And that's just because Copeland's a little bit older.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to put him into that box, but I know what you're trying to say. This was fine for what it was.
Yeah.
You know, I think the real money is in Cope and Christian being heels. That is how they've always been at their best, whether it be as tag team or singles. I understand why you don't probably want to do that right away, but, yeah, I don't know. This was fine. You know, it was nice seeing Kip have his moment. Luchasaurus, my guess from that video package was brought back to life by Jack Perry. We'll see if that actually plays out, possibly a reunion between those two, but yeah, fine way to start the show. Nothing special.
I'm hoping they end up with a reunion with those two.
That's when they were at their best.
Mm-hmm. Rejuvenate the tag team division again.
Yep.
So that's Forbidden Door in a nutshell.
Woo.
We got about 2 minutes left.
God, we are just awful at not going long. We are fucking always like 45 minutes. That's it. That's where we'll be good. And then we always go long.
We did it once, Double or Nothing this year. I think we kept that one at like 45.
Oh, wow. Nice. Nice.
Yeah. This one, we're just right at that hour mark. Is there anything else you want to say before we close the Forbidden Door talk?
No. Gosh, man. I didn't even know if I wanted to bring it up or touch on it, but The Rajah Jackson stuff is pretty deplorable. If I don't know, I wouldn't recommend anybody watch it if you haven't seen it. Maybe you have a weak stomach, but he takes advantage of a knocked out wrestler and fucking pummels him until people pull him off, and he's still trying to go off after this absolutely defenseless human being who apparently, you know, and what the other wrestler thought was part of the angle, hit Rajah before this. And then there's video before the incident of another wrestler telling Jackson that he's got to go out there and give that wrestler his receipt. And that is not a receipt. A receipt is like a one for one.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the thing about wrestling is like, number one, it's about making money. Number two, it's being able to make the next show. It's about taking care of the person across from you. You know, it's like I fake wrestle my son all the time. And I always have to remind him, it's like, we're not actually trying to hurt each other, bud. We're putting on a show. We got to take care of each other. You know, that's what makes it cool. That's what makes it fun. It's a performance, and there's all sorts of rumors out there as to what happened with Jackson and why he did what he did, but it's pretty fucking despicable if you ask me. And thank God wrestlers ran out there, because from the looks of it, he wasn't going to stop hitting that guy. And best wishes to Psycho Sid. Hope he makes the Sid Justice that we all associate Psycho Sid with, but best wishes to him. Hope he makes a full recovery and everything's okay. But that is not what a receipt is, beating the shit out of your opponent because they hit you once. So,
nope, it's 100% true. And I think one thing that I hear the Sandman, Jim Fullington, say all the time is, yeah, if it happens once, you stiffen back and say, we're even.
Yep.
Let it, then it just rolls along from there. So that's what a trained MMA fighter, an uneducated MMA fighter, unfortunately didn't know, or maybe he knew, who the heck knows. I mean, yeah, more details are going to come out as this story unrolls, and we'll probably might even talk about that this coming weekend, because that's, yeah, just very, very tough to watch. So
yeah, I just wanted to touch on it because of the whole receipt thing, which I think they're going to use that as a defense, and it absolutely should not be, especially, you know, whoever told him to do that, you can't be doing that to somebody who's not actually a professional wrestler. I don't think they could truly grasp what that means. But again, that does not defend what Jackson did at all.
No. 100% doesn't. I was just gonna, nope, I guess we are all good there. So anything else you want to talk about, Justin, before we get out?
God, I hate to end on such a bummer, but I'm feeling good, man. I think we hit everything. I'm excited to see what's coming up with, we have a whole nother hour. Let's review Heatwave. Let's talk about it. Kidding. I have not fucking watched that shit.
Talk about Ricky Saints going face to face with Obafemi at the end of the show.
Ooh, exciting.
Oh, Ricky Starks, the glory days. I miss him already. Oh, goodness gracious. Thank you so much for all of your support. Thank you, chat. I know we just kind of popped up on a Monday night. We were going to, Ryan did not want to go multiple, like 7, 8, 9 hours straight. He started school today. So I don't blame him there either.
Yep.
The shoot job has now begun. We might be back this weekend for, I believe it's WWE's Clash at Paris. But outside of that, if we are not, have a wonderful remainder of your week and Labor Day weekend here in the United States. Best of luck to your child going back to school.
It's going to be interesting.
Yes, and I have been interrupted for one last thing, which is true. They did remove the California school that was involved in this incident yesterday from the WWE ID program.
Oh, really? Just like since the incident happened?
They did, yes. That did happen earlier this afternoon. So, Brittany, thank you for pointing that out for us.
Good for them.
I know. Thank you, Brittany. There. Always. And that has been episode 394 of Top Rope Nation for Justin Joint. I'm Jesse Velasquez. We will see you very, very soon. Take care.
Peace.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.